Panther Nation, the C3 Podcast, brought to you by CarolinaCatChronicles.com.
I had fun, man, just out, you know, you guys joking, you know, we working at the same time, you know, putting the work in as a team. Like I said, man, I'm just glad to be with the guys, you know.
My favorite night of the week.
We're going to go out there, and we're playing to win. We're not out here just to show up. We're out here to win.
I don't want guys that want to win, because really, who doesn't? Nobody wants to win. Everybody wants to win. I want players that hate to
win. This embodies everything that we are as a team, as an organization. You know, our motto is keep pounding. And that's what we do, you know what I'm saying?
All right, Panther Nation, it's your boy, the Professor, a.k.a. Tony Dunn. This is the C3 Podcast brought to you by CarolinaCatChronicles.com, where every Tuesday night we chop up the latest Panthers news and opinion from the fan perspective. I do it with my homeboys. That's right. I'm here tonight with Mel Mayock. How's it going, Aaron?
Oh, man, it's doing great. Special edition tonight, special night, Wednesday night. It's usually Tuesdays for all of you out there listening, but Wednesday night we're doing a special Independence Week party. We got our boy Joe on the mend, trying to get a little bit of recoup time. So we brought in the special reinforcements. Rev Rico speaks.
David, what's up, my man?
What's going on, gentlemen? Glad to be in the house with such legends as yourself.
Fantastic. This guy's is, like we said, the C3 Carolina Panthers podcast, where we chop up all the latest news every week. We were off yesterday for Independence Day, and we did not tell anybody we were doing this. So tonight, they'll probably slowly trickle in. If not, people will catch it later. Look, tonight's episode, guys, is 17.22, Founding of a Nation. We're going to talk tonight about the beginnings of the Carolina Panthers franchise and how that started, just to kind of overlap with our nation's Independence Day yesterday. So yesterday we celebrated America's Independence Day. Today we celebrate Panther Nation's Independence Day. And we'll go back through some of that history. We'll talk the latest on Thomas Davis' desire for a new contract, Greg Olsen's Twitter game, all tons of things. Not quiet time in some ways, but we've got ways to fill it. You can reach the show using the hashtag C3 on Twitter, join the conversation on Facebook Live, or on the YouTube chat. And we appreciate if you go ahead and smash that like button if you're watching on any social media. We could use the support. Give the show a share somewhere. Tell a friend. That's how we grow. And right now, we're the longest running Panthers podcast. We haven't missed a week or a beat in like 4 years. So let's go ahead and get rocking and rolling. Guys, I think the number one news, and that came out last week, maybe around Thursday or Friday, that Thomas Davis mentioned to Kroger, Chris Kroger, a Charlotte radio host, that he was interested in a contract extension before training camp started. Now, he's going into the last year of his deal. I don't think this would be or is necessarily a problem right away, but it could get thorny given that Greg Olsen as well has said some of these things. So initial reactions, we'll start with you, Mel, on TD's call for a new contract.
Well, I think most of you guys out there know that I just recently moved back to the Queen City from the West Coast. And I tell you, I'm loving being back because I'm hearing, you know, a lot more WFNZ, a lot more radio. Every time I'm in the car, I'm listening to it. And I actually did hear that clip with TD talking to Kroger. And, you know, all the blowback from it, it's been exaggerated, or as Trump would say, a little bit of fake news, right? It's kind of taken a little taking a little grain of sand and making a big mountain out of a molehill, really, because he was very cordial about it. He didn't say anything like, hey, I want a new contract, or I'm not going to play if I don't get a new contract, or I'm pissed, or anything. All he simply said was, hey, I'm going into the last year of my contract. I still have some time left. I've done good work here. I put up good numbers. I would love to get a new contract done. Do it before the start of training camp. We're not even talking now, but I'd love to think we get something done. And it was as simple as that. And quite honestly, I agree with him. When you're talking about going into the last year of your contract, Greg Olsen, I feel a little bit differently about. But Thomas Davis going into the last year of his contract, at that age, a legend and arguably the best, if definitely one of the best, you know, face of the franchise. If you're making a Mount Rushmore of Panthers, Thomas Davis is on it. Going into the last year of his contract, I think it's right to extend the guy. So, I don't think he was out of bounds at all.
David, what's your initial reaction to this as a storyline in addition to Greg Olsen?
I mean, I agree with Aaron. You really can't. Like, we got to be careful not to blow this up into a, like, now every time we did it with Olsen, now every time it comes up, we're going to go Josh Norman on everybody. You can't do this.
Right.
I mean, Thomas Davis is arguably the second greatest linebacker in Panther history right now, next to Sam Mills. And I say that now, and I know some people are going to go, what about Luke? I'll talk to you about Luke in 4 years. Right now, we're talking about the epitome of, if there's anybody on this roster that epitomizes what Sam Mills keep pounding is all about,
right,
it is Thomas Davis. Because Thomas Davis should have been gone years ago.
Right.
So, I mean, when I look at it, what type of extension are we talking about? Now, I'm not giving the man $10 million a year.
No.
You know, when it comes down to that, you got to make a business decision. And, you know, at that point, loyalties go out the door. You got to do what's right for the team going forward. You know, we don't want a Bobby Vanilla where we paying this guy, even be in uniform. Right. So with Thomas Davis, you got to pay him if the price is right. You know, and I don't see Thomas as somebody that'll hold a team hostage. I think he knows what his fair market value is. And I think he doesn't wear, I don't think he wants to wear any other colors than Panther colors. So, you know, so I think this will be a situation where we can't get ahead of the horse. You know, we just got to pump our brakes and let it play out. Do I think something to get done before trading camp? I don't know.
I agree. All right. So all of that completely makes sense, but the one thing I think that makes this a little bit complicated is, first of all, that you got two veteran players who are approaching that kind of crucible moment in their careers where, for instance, Greg Olsen, we know it's time for him. He's got to get his now. Right. We get that and we understand that. Thomas Davis, again, he's not going to be able to command that. But I think where he complicated things is that he didn't rule out playing for another team.
Right.
And that was like, okay, so how is this going to get caustic in some ways? Right. Or could it? Then the other thing I think that complicates this is, at what point, I mean, Thomas Davis played 100% of the defensive snaps last year. I know that they're saying that they're going to put him on a pitch count a little bit more, and they want to work Shaq Thompson into, onto the field more. But it's just kind of one of those things, like, how do you even put Shaq on the field when Thomas Davis is playing like top 10 linebacker in the league type play? You know, right. And then at some point, you know, you got this. What I'm just saying is this, is all of a sudden his contract's coming to his end. His role in Carolina is going to be, the coaching staff at least indicates they want to diminish. It just feels like this all of a sudden could be painful in some way. I don't know if it's going to be with Thomas Davis, with Greg Olsen, but, you know, you can't make everybody happy at some point. And I think the fans could be the ones that are unhappy at the end. I don't know. But I thought that Davis saying that he has more football left in him, even if it's not with the Panthers, was a real sobering moment for me. You know?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, if you cut somebody. And full disclosure, before there was a Carolina Panther, and I know we're going to talk about that later, but before there was the Carolina Panthers, you know, I was a San Francisco 49ers. I was a huge Joe Montana guy.
Man, you and Joey.
And I never for one moment, if you'd have told me in 91 that Montana would be playing for another team,
Kansas City,
I would have told you that was no way in hell that was going to happen. When it happened, I was shocked. But Montana still had a little football left into him because he got here. He nearly got Kansas City to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So with TD, my thing is we never got Mills a ring. But I would be glad if we got TD a ring.
I agree.
And I think ultimately Thomas Davis, even if he goes somewhere to play for a year, I would not be shocked to see Thomas Davis as the linebacker coach in Carolina in the not so distant future.
Wouldn't that be sweet?
I think that's bringing the guy that's gonna
be around the team.
That's kind of like resurrecting the Sam Fields like Ricky and Pearl. Sam Mills.
Kind of like Ricky Pearl.
Well, wasn't not Sam Fields, Mark Fields, wasn't he a coach for a while? One of them also coached with the Panthers back in the day. That was Fields. It was right around when Mills got sick. Well, Mills was a coach at the end, right?
Yeah, Mills was a coach at the end. I don't remember if Fields was coaching or not. I know he was involved with the team in some way right. when he was sick.
So I think I would say that I think that it's one thing to cut bait with like a Josh Norman or to usher Jordan Gross unceremoniously out the door in some ways, or even Steve Smith, is that I thought his personality was caustic enough to where I just feel like if you do this to either Olsen or TD, like the whole fan base could revolt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, at some point that even has to contribute to whether it gets done. All right. Speaking of former Panthers, I got a little treat. I know that you guys can't see it, but everybody else
can. Trying to
get
a feel. They're trying to intimidate him.
Right now on the screen, guys, I'm playing a little D'Angelo Williams as a wrestler. He made his debut.
How's he going to perform? How's he going to hold
Mel, could you tell me a little bit about what this type of wrestling is?
Let me say that you shared this with me right before the show. I thought it was pretty awesome because a little backstory, D'Angelo, I've known that he's been a huge WWE fan for a long time. He and free agent Gary Barnage, former Panther tight end, they travel together every year to go see WrestleMania, the big Super Bowl of WWE. So they're big fans. So him getting in the ring is really no surprise. You know, to me, he looks like Kofi Kingston for those of you that are WWE fans out there. But, you know, he's here and he's doing, you know, he's not in the WWE, but he's in a developmental.
It's like an octagon shaped ring or pentagon. And I forget the name of the league that it was. Is that.
Was it Impact or was it Global Force or something like that?
Let me see. I think it might be. Was it Impact? Okay. That's what it says in the background. Yeah, Impact. Yeah. So, what is Impact for us non wrestlers?
I'm going to let Aaron answer that one.
it's just a lower level league, right? I mean, there's 100 of them out there, right? That tour regionally and they're trying to make it to the big time, you know, but they got a strong following, but they're not the WWE. Folks go there, try to make a name for themselves and then work their way up into the WWE. So it's pretty much a developmental league.
So it's like minor league wrestling.
Exactly. Kind of like the D League and NBA.
Pretty good.
He was really good. I watched
really good. He did. He came out. He did a couple of like aerial type moves, like a couple that swing around on some dudes, and then ended with like a backflip onto the guy for a pin.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that. And when he cut that backflip, I'm going to tell y'all what really popped in my mind. the Seattle game where he fumbled on like the 4-yard line.
Oh god!
Like, oh, so you can do that. You can do that, but you fumbled. But you fumbled. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Hey. The backflip was impressive. There was some cool moves in there. He did a good job. He looked pretty cut up. I thought he did look a little short for wrestling. That's what I would have pegged him on. It seemed like all the other wrestlers were a lot taller. And he also...
Did you see the finishing move there where he had the guy on the table? And usually they're going to do that. They're going to break through that table. But he just got to skid it over. And they flipped over and he ended up finishing and winning the match. But it didn't go
as... Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I saw the other one where they do this thing where they like jump. It's like a... They're like the guy's on the ground and it's almost like an elbow drive, except for they just jump on them with their back.
Right.
And like there was some sort of move. And then at one point he climbed on the other dude's shoulders and they did it together. And so it was like a little mini me on top of this dude. It was fun and I'm glad. I'd like to see that. That's kind of cool because you got an interest, you got a like, you have some resources, you have the athleticism. Yep. I wonder if he actually can turn it into something.
You know, I mean, he's got the name, so I would not be surprised. And he's got the passion, he definitely has the athleticism. He gets the right coaching and the right development. You know, I mean, people laugh about wrestling because it's fake, and it is, but it really what it is it's scripted. These guys are really incredible athletes to be able to do what they do without dying. You know,
that's the key issue. Be able to do it without dying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No paralysis.
That lasts like 10 seconds.
No paralysis. Right. And the lifestyle they live too. They just ball out on drugs and like all this stuff and then go do that. Or is that the old, is that the old wrestling?
In the words of the great Rick James, cocaine's a hell of a drug.
That's right. And they like to, man, you go back and read some of the stories about those dudes, or I've heard, like, my friend used to do this segment on the radio, and he would go back and visit these old players, and it was like what they were doing. Like, the girl who I loved, Liz, back in the day, she OD'd, and like, I mean, they were just...
Wait, Liz? Oh, you mean Miss Elizabeth?
Yeah, yeah. She like OD'd.
Yeah. One of my childhood crushes.
That's right. So, I mean, those guys go hard at it. All right, so a couple questions in the YouTube chat. Is Shaqued wants to know if anybody knows any news about FanFest yet and how they're doing the tickets. I haven't heard anything. So, I don't think they've announced it yet, Shaqued. All right, and I guess the last story of note is it turns out Greg Olson's got a Twitter game. He's got some Twitter game. And that the Panthers are trying to keep people pumped up a little bit. And they're doing their social media thing where it's like, happy 4th of July, this and that. And one of them was, will Greg Olson have his fourth consecutive 1,000-yard season? And he responds to them. He responds to them with his own meme of himself laughing at a joke at some event, like with a real funny face laugh, like reminded me of what's his name from Goodfellas. You always see that meme of who's that dude from Goodfellas that what is the cast of Goodfellas cast? But anyway, Greg Olson is playing back. I think he's coming in with a chip in his shoulder again. And I would not be surprised if he has like the number one tight end stats out of everybody this year. Ray Liotta.
I'd love it.
Go ahead, sir, with your hand raised.
You know that whole thing, Wolf? I'm pretty sure there is not a tree on the property at Men and Moorhead because everybody on this team has a chip on their shoulder. You had them, the way they talked about Cam, so he has a chip on his shoulder. McCaffrey, they said he shouldn't have went in the top 15. He got a chip on his shoulder. Curtis Samuel fell to the second round. He got a chip on his shoulder. They called KK Mr. Money, chip on his shoulder. Greg Olsen needs more money, chip on his shoulder. TD wants to play until he's 95, chip on his shoulder. Charles Johnson is trying to prove that he can play 16 games in 1 year, chip on his shoulder. I don't think there's no more. Listen.
There's no more chips. They even get the most.
Right. I mean, like, there's not a tree in Charlotte.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And that is true. I got a bone to pick with Christian McCaffrey right now.
Girl gang will get you for talking about McCaffrey, homie.
I know.
You better tread lightly.
Tell me your next Mike Tolbert, man.
Oh, I got problem right now is that one of the girl gang was the one that brought it up, I think. And they said, is this real? And they hashtagged they mentioned the Panthers, and it was a signing event that his sports agency was doing somewhere in Charlotte, and he was charging $60 an autograph.
Ooh. Oh,
cash only.
That won't end well.
And so then
Christian, what is you doing?
I know. So then they, with the Panthers, jumped into the conversation and said, we're checking on it. Right. And like, we're vetting this to see if it's real, because it was a good Panther fan. I forget who it was that brought it up and said, like, they didn't want to just start trashing them. They wanted to see if it was legit. And I was like, I hope this isn't true. But then I a couple of days later, I checked back in and I asked both of them. I said, anybody heard anything? And Panthers have gone dark on this subject. So I'm going to say this, Christian McCaffrey, if you're out there selling autographs, dude, like, I think that's super weak. I think that's super weak.
Hey, can I talk to McCaffrey real quick? McCaffrey, let me explain something to you about the states of North Carolina and South Carolina.
We poor.
If you are a Carolina Panther, you have to understand, yes, we're poor. You know, I mean, I don't live in the Carolinas anymore, but I still got, you know, in the Carolinas money. You know, we're check to check. Homie, we went and bought your jersey. We ain't got, you know, $60 to pay you to sign it.
I know.
We bought your jersey. So let me talk to you real quick. If you plan on being around Charlotte for a prolonged period of time, I would advise you not to do ill-advised things, because just as loyal as we are, we will bounce your behind out of here and you'll be persona non grata, which I'm pretty sure applies to a bunch of different Panthers now. You know, like, we're not going to mention the guy down in New Orleans that, just so happens to, you know, not be able to catch a cold if it was standing right in front of him. You know, you got to throw him a nine route 15 times and he'll catch two of them and drop 30 of them. But we don't talk about that guy no more. You don't want to be that guy. Okay.
God, all right? I just feel like I'm going to tell you this is that you're right. I think you put it best when you said we just bought your jersey. Right.
Right.
And
things ain't cheap.
But let's verify that that's true before we go and bash.
Dismissed yet, and I thought the Panthers would have come back and said no way, and
maybe, I wouldn't nice a button until you know.
I'm just gonna let you know. I'm not even happy.
I'll give a benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to see it, I guess, but I'm going to say I do understand this, is that a lot of people expend a lot of resources that they barely have to support something like the Carolina Panthers. And
I Google Christian McCaffrey autograph signings, you know, for a fee, and there is one that comes up, but it comes up back in April up in Stanford. So, I mean, there's nothing about a paid autograph session around Charlotte. And I got no problem with him around Stanford trying to make money before he's a pro. I got no problem with that, really. Right. I mean, hey, you decide if you want to go.
His dad's only a former professional football player. Man, poor guy. All right. Well, anyway. Okay. Let's get on to, I don't think there's any other good news to talk about for the Panthers right now, which is good news, actually. No news right now is good news. We don't have anybody breaking hands on their honeymoon, which one football player just recently I heard did. We don't have anybody. One, I think it was, I guess it was a stealer got in trouble for driving without a without a license. So no news is good news for the Carolina Panthers right now.
And I got one more for you, Professor, but I'll save that for the Ice Up Sun segment.
Oh, okay. Well, then that was a Dallas Cowboy. You know, a couple of Dallas Cowboys got it. You know, didn't no good news come out of Dallas today, which no good news ever really comes out of Dallas. But still, one of the offensive linemen got arrested for a felony count of possession of marijuana.
Oh, gosh.
Wait, hold on. How in the world do you get a felony count for possession of marijuana? Doesn't that mean like you have a mass quantity?
Didn't Larry Allen or one of those guys did that too back in the day, right?
It depends
on what man. Listen, all of the Cowboys were high back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Talk about wrestling.
Didn't they rent a house to have like their little drug benders in?
Oh, of course they did. Ooh. I bet you a lot of
people did. I remember like Nate Newton, Larry Allen. Yeah, Nate Newton, Larry Allen, Michael Irvin. All of them, they had like a house where they would just go. And like it was like a party house, like it was a trap house before trap music.
Yeah, that's right. How about this? Is Pro Football Talk finally got some class and took down their? They used to have a tracker where you could see if players had been arrested, right? And that was all it was, is like arrests and problems. All right, so let's get on with what we did come here to talk tonight about, and that is the founding of Panther Nation goes back to the 95 season, right, where our inaugural season. But this started as a brainchild, guys. The Carolina Panthers started in April of 1987 when Richardson approached Nation Bank CEO Hugh McColl. And by the end of the year, he started pitching the idea to other people and the league, feeling things out. In 1989, he makes a move and hires Mike McCormick, who was the former Seahawks president and GM. He joined Richardson's sport team as a consultant, and he eventually becomes the Panthers president. And they start slowly in 1989, really making the kind of beginning steps for feeling out if a team should be brought here. That year, they tried to gauge interest for professional football in the Carolina Kickoff 89 game, where they had the Jets. The Jets played the Eagles at Carter-Finley. And 56,000 people showed up to that. In September of that year, he brought in 11 partners, and they started getting things done. 89, he selects Charlotte as the city for the stadium. You know, you're 6 years away. They did get held up by a lockout potential slowdown that delayed everything by 1 year. But then by 91, the governors of North Carolina and South Carolina are supporting the effort, and that's when things started to heat up, and he submits an application with a $100,000 deposit to the NFL. And then the next year, I mean, they have to go, is that they're planning on bringing an expansion team. And guys, there were 11 potential cities. They narrowed it down from 11 to 7 to 5 very quickly in 1992. And that's when the Carolina Panthers really started to work. Do you guys, was there a lot of discussion? This is like before my time of following sports even, is that, was there a lot of nervous anxiety? Because it seemed like it was going to be difficult to get a team to the Carolinas.
You know, go ahead, man.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say growing up in Charlotte in 1989 is the year I graduated high school. So I was kind of a young teenage buck back around that time, 1987, being a sophomore in high school. Watching the news, it was a different media time back then. You didn't have instant access to news like we do today on our cell phones, right? I mean, you hear stuff instantly. Now, back then, once a day, the 6 o'clock news, you watch the sports. I remember Harold Johnson on Channel 9 News coming on and saying, Carolina's put in a bid for an NFL franchise. And I remember everybody, all my friends are like, oh, wouldn't that be great? But yeah, that'll never happen. You know, I mean, that's pie in the sky. But you know what? The Hornets coming into town around that time, around 89, that made it possible, right? I mean, that's when you said, huh, okay, we're more than a dot on a map, right? I mean,
yeah, you got to think of what Charlotte was like in 1989. Yeah. I mean, it's booming and big now, but it was growing, but nowhere.
87, to where, 88, it was very much different than it is today. I mean, I've got a skyline. If you go to my Twitter page, I've got a background of the difference between Carolina or Charlotte skyline in 1985 and today, and it's dramatic. It really is.
Do you remember any of the time where they were trying to bring a team to the Carolinas, David?
No, I mean, you know, as a Spartanburg kid, it really didn't start hitting home for us until the beginning of 93.
Right.
That's when it started getting started more real.
Yeah, that's when it, I mean, because, you know, it was like, whatever was going to happen was going to happen in North Carolina. That was the feeling. So it was like, oh, well, North Carolina's going to get a team, you know, so we'll just go on about our lives. But then I think, you know, well, like Jerry Richardson has a king status in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and he's earned it. You know, I remember as a kid, we would be in a Denny's and Jerry Richardson would be in there. And there would be a table that needed busing and they would be packed and swamped. And here's this man, you know, this multimillionaire at the time that owned the place would get up and bust the table and lead a tip, you know. So he had a king status. But I remember in 93, it was just like, well, it's not really going to happen. And I remember WYFF, Channel 4 in Spartanburg, I remember them breaking in for the NFL's announcement that we were getting the team. And I remember the weeks, you know, the subsequent weeks behind that, it was just like this feeling of, oh my God,
Euphoria.
We're getting a NFL team.
Euphoria.
You know?
Yeah.
And then it was like, not only are we getting a NFL team, you know, in Charlotte, they're going to have a training camp in Spartanburg. So little old Spartanburg now is going to have professional athletes running around during the summer.
Let me ask you, Jonathan, how important was it to you as a South Carolina guy that it was called the Carolina Panthers and the logo was made to look like the two states put together as opposed to the Charlotte Panthers? Would you be as passionate today if it was the Charlotte Panthers as of 1995?
I don't know that I would have been passionate because it wouldn't have been my team.
Right.
Now, here's a unique story. We used to have the Spring Fling in Spartanburg. Well, they still have it. But we had a Nothing's Finer Than Football in the Carolinas rally in Spartanburg. And Mr. Richardson was there. And I remember him speaking to the crowd, and we were kind of down front. And he kind of, you know, walked towards the crowd a little bit. And I remember yelling to him, thank you for getting us a team. And I remember him, and you know, Jerry Richardson has a very distinct face. So you see him look, you know, he looks back, and here I am at this time in 93, you know, I'm an 11-year-old kid. And he points and he says, well, I did it for you. Well, you couldn't point to me and say that if it was the Charlotte Panthers.
Right.
You know, you couldn't, like, I'm not dumb enough for you to sell me on that dream. But when you call it the Carolina Panthers, and at the time, my address was 258 Evans Street, Spartanburg, South Carolina. 258 Evans Street is right across from the entrance to Gibbs. The house is no longer there. If you go to camp, 258 Evans Street is where you park to go into Gibbs.
Wow. Okay.
And that whole area, I remember when that was houses. You know, like the practice fields for training camp, those were all streets and houses. I remember when Steve Davis was playing for Spartanburg High, they played up at Snyder Field, which is behind the building that houses the Richardson statue. So, I remember when none of that was there, and I remember the change. You know, like you have the Renaissance Marriott, that's because of the Carolina Panthers. So the economic boom that I saw in my city came directly from as a result of us getting a football team. So for me, it was just like you couldn't put that couldn't have been a thing if it would have been the Charlotte Panthers.
You know what? I wrote a story on CarolinaCatChronicles.com, and for all of you listening out there, go visit that site every day. It's great articles going up all the time. And if you want to write, you want to have your voice be heard, let us know. You can post a story up there. But I posted a story. It's probably been a couple of years, Tony, but I don't know if you remember. But I put a story up about why I'm a Panthers fan. Yeah. And it's not because I love Jake Delhomme or Steve Smith or Julius Peppers or Cam Newton, which I love all those guys. But the real reason is because it is exactly what you were saying right there, Matt, it's our team. It represents our cities, and it took our teams from the minor leagues to the big leagues. It gave us an economic boom. It means so much to the people that live here. So that's why the Panthers love them so much more than just whether they go 10-6 or 6-10 or what have you.
David is keyed in on an idea, and you brought it up, Mel, is that it was important to Richardson, who is from North Carolina but has college ties to South Carolina, that he was a visionary enough to realize that if we were going to do it in this market, you had to, at least especially in those early days, you had to tap into both sources. And so that was a cool thing because it's actually probably I'm trying to think, are we the only, what other teams are named after a state or states? I guess you would say New England.
Well, yeah, New England.
Didn't they used to be the Phoenix something?
Yeah, they used to be the Phoenix Cardinals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then they became the Arizona Cardinals.
So it's almost like ahead of its time to name yourself after the state rather than the city.
I want to start a petition. We got to guess. I want to start a petition that hopefully the New York teams now be named the New Jersey teams because you don't even play in New York.
I know.
So
it's crazy. All right, so this is what goes. So in 92, it must have been nerve-wracking when he was trying to pitch this when there was 11 possible landing spots. By October of 1993, this is what the New York Times reported, crunch time for expansion cities. And they said, quote, of the five bidding cities, favorites, St. Louis, Baltimore, and Charlotte, Jacksonville and Memphis are the outsiders, and rumors were that if St. Louis did not get a team, that the Patriots could move to St. Louis. That's what was reported by the New York Times in 1993, and there was 100. So this is what it took to get this started. There was $140 million franchise fee for the team to pay to get into the league. Some other things that are kind of interesting. Jeb Bush was part of the ownership of that Jags team that got in the same year. And the Panthers in October, I think it was maybe November of 93, it's reported that the Panthers, and this is kind of celebrated by them as a team, that they were the unanimously selected. And then they had to postpone the announcement of the other team. So why was it that the Panthers were unanimously selected? I think there's a couple of factors. Mel, you mentioned one earlier with the Hornets were cited as a big reason because of their early franchise success. But also I read that the Hornets had led the league in attendance for 4 out of 5 years of their inception. So that convinced a lot of people that while the population figures weren't there, maybe on the face of it, that the support was there, right? The other thing I think was because of Richardson and how compelling of a figure he is, and he gave this speech where he mentioned how much football meant to him as a young man and gave him an opportunity to be the success he became. the business owner, and he's a legend in that. Like, I think he caught the overtime pass in the Ice Bowl, you know, so he's got he's got street cred with the owners and with people of football. And then the last, he had a very innovative way of ensuring that they could sell tickets. And that was, he said, we're going to pay for our own stadium and we're going to fund it through these PSLs. And they made it so they sold something like 40,000 tickets, PSLs, in the first like week or something. So yeah, with that strategy, they get them. So here, this was, by the way, Baltimore was considered a leader for a franchise then, and they were going to be called the Baltimore Bombers or the Baltimore Cobras.
Wow.
Thank God that didn't happen.
I know. Wouldn't have, that really would have turned football in an awful direction, I feel like.
But you know what? Before they were named, I don't think Ravens really resonated with anybody either, though.
Yes, but I feel like a raven is kind of a generic animal where, like, the Bombers or the Cobras, it seems like all I could think is Cobra Kai, sweep the leg, or
A lot of these nicknames do sound weird. Remember how weird it sounded to hear the New Orleans Pelicans? I mean, that still sounds weird to me.
Yeah.
Well, that's because George Chen was an idiot. But,
that's true that.
That's neither here nor there. But, now, here's a unique thing.
But that's the new owner that named him that. Was the new owner that named him that.
But I'm still blaming on Sheehan. He would have never been in position. He'd have never been in position to name him that if Sheehan wouldn't move the team. True. So this is Sheehan's fault to the day. But here's the crazy thing, wasn't he?
A little.
Oh, yeah. Just, you know.
That's like saying the freaking Puerto Rican's a little tough.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. He's a lot tough, and George Sheehan was a lot arrogant.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I never heard like anything good about the guy, like nothing. And generally, with some owners, you hear like, you know, there's like fluff pieces. Yeah. Oh, you know, the owner of the Texans saw a little kid drowning, and he jumped in and saved him. You know, there's always that one story. You know, like if I was to use Jerry Richardson, you know, him paying for the Charleston Nines funeral.
Right.
You know.
Paying $10 million for the UNCC football stadium.
Yeah, right. But on the count of three, somebody name me a nice story they heard about Sheehan.
Well, there was that time he was walking down the street and he saw a little baby drowning on the other side in a little mud puddle. And he decided to go in and pay for a prostitute and have a happy time. And
oh, God. the other thing is that I was reading about him and he was like, yeah, we're a big reason the Panthers are here. Like, I mean, he was very open. Like he thought he was going to be king.
He thought he was the white knight of Charleston. Well, he could have been if he'd have kept his ego in check.
Well, it wasn't just him. It was another guy that was on that kick. Like, yo, Jerry Richardson owes us for. Who was it? The guy that owns the Speedway. That guy.
Bruton Smith.
Him. Like, that was his thing early, you know, I think it was last year, a year before last, and he was like, you know, he's the reason why the team's there because, you know, they were talking about, you know, of course, you know, when the time comes that Mr. Richardson passed and the team has to be sold, which I'll tell you, that worries me. You know, I don't know if there's a provision that says the team must remain in North Carolina, that part does worry me because if you sell it to somebody with no ties here, then what's to say they keep it here?
Yeah, and as somebody who just bought PSL,
I'm not going to cheer for the Carolina. Well, I don't know what I would do if the team moved.
I don't know how
I would respond.
I would never pull for a team to move.
Yeah, no way. I think the other thing, though, is I think I've got good news on why the Carolina Panthers won't move, no matter who buys them. I think that what we saw in this last year is that we see a backwards regression of the teams that are moving. I don't think it's going to make the financial benefit is going to be as large as they want. And here's the reason. I believe that they moved into bigger markets because they think that, I guess, number one, you get more revenue through TV. Because
what are you talking about?
These, like, for instance, the Chargers, the Rams, they moved to LA because you get that big marketplace that is outside of just having to fill a stadium. But their real
power. I get that 10 years tops.
Right. Here's the thing, though. People don't watch TV as much anymore. So I think that the power of television and the financial gain of television is going to be on the decline. And I think what we'll see is what the Panthers are actually getting ahead on is they're getting their social media game and their video content on their website up and rolling. I think you have a better way of financing your team through developing a direct relationship with fans rather than trying to blanket a bunch of casual fans, but you try to cultivate a cult. And I think that we can do that. But the easy one is that would be something to be concerned about. I do want to point out this is that on October 29th, 1993, when news that Panthers were selected to be going to be an expansion team in Charlotte, 50,000 people showed up in the streets of Charlotte and greeted Richardson in a celebratory parade.
I remember that.
So
I'd like to point out that that was actually the first ever Roaring Riot event.
Yeah, there you go. That was the OG Roaring
Long
Riot
before
event.
Long before Zach had his vision, not that was even the first
born.
Ever
He's probably barely born then. This was, look, the fans are that excited, and the team was so new that I read one article where the lady, her name was Rory Spears, and she was writing
about... Oh, that's an awesome name.
Yeah, she was writing about the Jags and their expansion, and she, and halfway through the article, called us the Carolina Cougars. And then finished she was finished it with calling us the Carolina Panthers, but halfway through the article, she didn't even know the name of our team, and she was writing about the expansion of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So that's how new things were. Guys,
she reminds me of Barry Switzer.
Yeah. He didn't know where Charlotte was at, right?
That's right.
Adam Schein, 2 years ago, Super Bowl season. Adam Schein wrote an apology letter, a so-called apology letter, where he was apologizing to
Cam Newton,
the city of Charlotte. Yeah, for what he said. It was for what he said about Cam Newton, but he was apologizing to the city of Charlotte. So I was like, so I tweeted him back, like, dude, no. Mm-hmm. And he was like, not good. I said, let me explain something to you. When we say two states, one team, we mean two states, one team. You don't simply apologize to Charlotte. Because if you do, you still have millions of other people that are going to come for your neck for apologizing to the to just one set of million people. It's two states.
I've gone after Adam Schein several times, but I will tell you that what I like about the guy is he will admit that he's wrong, and he'll come back and do some things like that. So he is a hot
take. It's only Colin Cowherd would.
Yeah, he's the hot take specialist, but he does have an ounce of soul in him a little bit. All right, so after we get all this news that we're going to be starting in the 95 season, right, the coaching seems to be the immediate priority, and a lot of rumors surfaced that the Carolina Panthers wanted to hire Joe Gibbs, who had just quit the Washington Redskins. But then, this is crazy, in December of 1994, Richardson starts out, our first move as a team was, he got in trouble with the league. He got, Richardson got censured by Paul Tagliabue, for a tampering charge with talking with Steelers defensive coordinator Dom Capers, who was later hired as our head coach. We lost two draft picks for that.
Oh.
Yeah, crazy. So, like, right away, we get on January 23rd, we hired Dom Capers and added as our head coach, and then we get what was titled in, I think it was in, this would have been Metzger, right? the reporter. What's his name? You know, Joe Metz. He wrote Rummage Sale.
Joe Menzer, who we've had on the show.
Yeah. Joe Menzer wrote Rummage Sale, and this was about the expansion draft where I guess teams put up a couple of people they were willing to part with that had bad contracts or were old or not good. And anyway, interesting fact, Panther favorite, hometown or led, I would say that he's one of kind of a cult favorite, is Steve Beuerlein. Steve Beuerlein was not drafted by the Panthers in the expansion draft. Instead, he was drafted number one by the Jacksonville Jaguars. We picked Rod Smith with the second pick in this expansion draft. So that's not that one. That was Rod Smart. Okay. Rod Smart was a corner from New England. So as we entered the draft, we had no quarterback, and it looked like we were eyeing a guy by the name of Frank Reich. Is that right?
Yeah, he backed up Jim Kelly.
Come back, Frank!
Yeah. And that's right. Because we had Bill Polian as our general manager and the ties to Buffalo. So it goes on. Here's some interesting things about our first draft. Number one, Warren Sapp was projected to be the number one, and he got popped with Dirty P, and he had cocaine and marijuana in his system. Wouldn't be the last time. But
that's like lunch in, you know, at the University of Miami.
Yeah.
That's what they have for
that's
lunch.
Second
so
period.
That'd be second like, period. Everybody, yeah, exactly.
He did end up falling to the 12th spot where he's picked by Tampa. But here's the number one pick in that draft was Tony Baselli, right? Pretty sure. Yeah.
Not the expansion draft. You're talking about the regular draft.
Right. And then we were to have the number two pick, but we traded with the Bengals to back to five. I guess trying to get back some of those draft picks that we had lost. And the Bengals jump up and get Kajana Carter, who was a running back from Penn State. Kajana Carter totaled 1,144 yards in eight seasons in the pros with 20 touchdowns. I'm glad we didn't go that route. Warren Sapp would have been nice, though.
Yeah.
But, boy, I tell you what, that Chris Jenkins-Warren Sapp feud was fun to watch, and I would rather have Chris Jenkins, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have rather had Chris Jenkins too.
He was awesome, except for, and then he got hurt his shoulder. He did go on and play great for the Jets too. And I think his Sapp was a couple of years ahead of him, obviously. All right, so
but you know what? What ticked me off with the Chris, with that draft was the selection of Kerry Collins, and I'm gonna tell you why. Frank Wright was the quarterback for the Bills when they had that great comeback against the Oilers. So I thought that I was all on board with like it being Frank Wright time. Like Frank Wright was the man. Yeah. Like me and my cousin Terrence, we would be in the park across the street from my grandma's house. And it was, you know, like we would be throwing a football. And I was Frank Wright because like Frank Wright had just came back from down. We talk about the Falcons blowing a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl, which I don't want the CP3 podcast to distract you from the fact that the Falcons blew a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl. We should never forget that, ever. That should always be at the top of our mind. But I digress. Listen, they were up 31-3. Frank Wright brought them back. When Frank Wright came to Carolina, I'm like, Frank Wright going to be the man. Then we draft Kerry Collins, and I'm like, what are we doing? Like, why are we drafting Kerry Collins when we got Frank Wright? I was like, never a Kerry Collins fan. To this day, I'm still not a Kerry Collins fan. But we had Frank Wright. So I was like, dude, we could have gotten somebody else right there in that slot.
And you know who I was pulling for us to get? No, I was cool with Frank Wright. But at the time, there was this little-known free agent quarterback by the name of Jason Garrett.
I could have dealt with Garrett.
Wow, that's crazy.
Who was now the head coach of the Cowboys, obviously. But, yes, that was a free agent that I really wanted back then.
So. Hey, I think he hates that gig.
Not after last year.
Listen, let me tell you something. Being a coach for the Dallas Cowboys has to be the equivalent of working for the current president. You do it because it's the job. You might not be a fan of the guy. Right. You might not like him. And to me, you'd be like, I can't stand this dude. But you work for him because who else going to pay you $5 million to do it?
This is, speaking of that first draft, is you got Kerry Collins, who had a lot of struggles in Carolina because he was a jerk, right? Mm-hmm. And
a bona fide jerk.
And a drunk. Yeah. And a racist too at that and
well I wasn't so, gonna bring up that part I kind of got in trouble on Twitter for bringing that one up.
Dial it back right as you then we picked Tyrone Poole, a cornerback,
and that was a good pick.
And then we got Blake Brockermeyer, who played played 4 years with us, then he goes on to Chicago and signed a big deal. But Blake Brockermeyer's career in Carolina ended with him no longer talking to the media. He refused to talk to anybody because he was supposedly a straight shooter, and people didn't like that he was so blunt. So he completely refused to talk to the media, wouldn't even acknowledge them in the hallway. And somebody said that the reason he did it is because somebody in the media called him a cream puff.
you know who I wish from that team, from that era, would not talk to the media, would just not talk, period, is Frank Garcia. He was in that second draft. If he wouldn't talk to the media, I'd be happy. Frank, shut up.
He was first. He was in the first draft. He got picked the fourth round that year, Frank Garcia. Yeah. Sean,
so I thought he was in the 96 draft.
I think I saw
he was
him
in the first
on,
one.
Yeah. And, okay. Also, another kind of bust was Sean King, defensive end that got in trouble. He liked to smoke weed a lot.
You mean Frank Alexander before Frank Alexander?
Right. Exactly. So you had Sean King in the second. Then the next year you get Jason Peter, and that goes south.
It went south before it started.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things going on. Turns out that Frank Garcia was actually the best draft pick out of all of those dudes.
Listen, do not compliment Garcia. It will go to his head and it's already big.
Gosh. All right.
Can y'all pick up on the fact that I don't like Garcia?
Yes. He's been blocked probably. I do want to remind everybody, we have been the Cardiac Cat since the very beginning. Our first debut game was a loss to the Falcons by 3 points in overtime.
That's pretty fitting.
Don't let that first loss distract you from the fact that the Falcons blew a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl.
This just in. And,
also, I would like to point out that we started 0-5. Our first win came versus the Jets with a Sam Mills backfield fumble recovery interception, something to that effect, with a 37-yard touchdown return. Mel, you remember that, don't you?
Oh, I do, man. I remember the feeling. The feeling was like, yeah, all of this exuberance about getting a team. We finally get there, and then the first five games, we get beat over the head, and we just were not very good. I think we got blown out like 4 out of those 5 games, and it was awful. And then all of a sudden, that magical moment when Mills got that fumble and ran it back for a touchdown, it was like the movie narrative was rewritten for Charlotte. And it was like, hey, you know, you jump up off the couch and you're like, something's going to happen here. And it got special after that. And we made a run. We finished 7-9 that year, which was an expansion team record. And I think it still might be to this day. And then went on to go 12-4 the next year. So it was like everything changed on a dime with Sam Mills on that play. It was crazy.
Yeah, I remember that because – I don't know if y'all remember the generic 95 Carolina Panther jersey. I mean, it didn't look nothing like the actual Carolina Panther jersey now, or even it was just a black jersey with a silver 95 on it. And my mother bought me one of those. And when Sam Mills took that to the house, I went outside and was running up and down the street. It's like, yeah. And my mother looked at me and she said, if you get hit and killed, I'm gonna kill you.
don't come running to me.
Yeah, if you break your neck, don't run. And I'm like, mom, if I break my neck, like, really, that's kind of harsh. She was like, well, you're doing dumb stuff like running in the street. I said, but we just won our first game. And my brother, who's to this day, he didn't convert with me. He stayed a 49er fan. So he likes to call me. But on this day, he's sitting there with egg on his face because I told him we were going to win the game. And which the great thing about it is, I think that next year, didn't the Niners win the Super Bowl that year? Because we beat them the next year? Or was it Dallas won it that year?
Let's see. I'll Google it.
Yeah, I think. Because I remember my argument, I used to always say to people, you can say what you want about us, but we got a tendency for knocking off the previous year's Super Bowl champs.
That was Super Bowl 30. Is that right? Let's see. That was Cowboys Steelers was in 1996, January 96.
So that was the Larry Brown game. That's when, like, you had never heard of Larry Brown, and Neil O'Donnell right. pretty much hands him the football twice, and he's the Super Bowl, you know, Super Bowl MVP.
It was the year before that the 49ers were in it because Montana flipped the coin. By the way, throwback, Diana Ross was the halftime show.
Oh, wow.
Hey, talk about class.
You all the nuggets, man. You going deep with the research tonight. All
right. I know, he's in his professor mode tonight.
No, I just Googled. Well, I just found out the Diana Ross one as we Googled that. But I do want to say that, like, I will follow up with what Mel said, is that we were the most successful expansion team in NFL history, from what I remember. And it's after starting 0-5, we reeled off 1, 2, 3, 4 in a row. We won 5 of our next 6, and you finished the season with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 9, right? Not bad for your first start. So some good things down memory lane, but things really went sideways for the Carolina Panthers in the coming years. But the following year was an exciting one, right?
12-4, baby.
12-4. All right. That's pretty much all I wanted to. Oh, I was going to say this. All right. Last thing for tonight is, before we get to our ice up picks, I've got the Panthers timeline up here. I thought I had it. And I was going to say, I think we need to set a real Independence Day for Panther Nation. So the question is, do we do it based on Panther? Let me see. Of that Richardson, your vote, should we do it on that October 29th parade where Charlotte celebrated the team? Or I think another important date could be, here we go, let's see, it's either that, which would have been October 29th, 1990, what did I say, 3?
Yeah, 93.
Or do we do it with that first win? A first win could be one. Or actually, it'd probably be the unanimous October 26th. We could either do October 26th, which is where the NFL owners unanimously selected the Carolina Panthers as the 29th franchise, or we can do 29th. And maybe we should
I think you got to go to 26 because the 29th wouldn't have happened without the 26.
See, I always go to 26.
Think about it like this. It's much like the real Declaration of Independence, is that, like, it was really finished on the 2nd and then it meanders for 2 days. So October 26 is the official Independence Day for Panther Nation, guys, 1993. So just a fun fact for you guys, and I think that it's kind of fun to go down memory lane. All right.
And we should organize a party.
We should. That would be a cool thing to start. Is like
that would
our own
Panthers Independence Party.
Panthers Panther Nation Independence Day. Founding of a nation started here with C3. All right, guys, we got to get. Let's get to our ISO picks. And Mel, are you ready, locked and loaded for to deliver an ISO?
I am, and I thought my boy there, Rev Rico, was going to blow my ice up pick tonight when he started talking about the Cowboys.
But you know I wouldn't do you like that.
Yeah, I know, right?
I
wouldn't
do you like that.
Did we tighten? You didn't even know. it is amazing to me that this time of year, there's always a few knucklehead NFL players out there that just go down in flames. And it's like, man, I mean, you got a career here that so many kids dream of having. I mean, I know that I dreamt of making it to the NFL until my body stopped growing at 5'8" and 170 pounds, right? Everybody wants that shot at the NFL glory. And then you get there, and then you got the person I'm going to ice up tonight, and he's just one of many, right? Because you named an offensive lineman that got busted for marijuana down there, just truckloads of marijuana. But this was a linebacker who started 6 games for the Cowboys last year, Damian Wilson, gets arrested for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. A lot of the details haven't come in as to what happened and why, but he was busted on that. And I mean, this is the time of year where you're worrying about something like Ray Caruth going wrong. You know, please, NFL players, just stay out of trouble. Get in there and just exercise. You're making millions and millions and millions of dollars. Don't get out there with marijuana and cocaine and assault with a deadly weapon. Focus on the prize, because this is the time that champions are made. So as an example for all the other knuckleheads out there that are blowing the childhood dreams that everybody like me wishes they had, Damian Wilson, ice up, son.
All right. This is awesome. To follow up and ice up, you got a compliment. Wes Roop says you kind of look like Jack Del Rio.
Didn't I read somewhere Jack Del Rio is like one of the top 10?
That's funny.
I second that. He does look like that. He's just like the smaller version.
I read somewhere Jack Del Rio was voted the top 10 sexiest men in the NFL.
There you go. So, good job. Hey, you know, good job. Go. All right.
David. Yeah, I'm gonna maybe break my headset.
David, you got an ice up pick for us, David?
All right, listen. I very seldom broach this subject, but tonight I need to tell the king, LeBron James, to ice up. Ooh. For this reason alone, LeBron made the statement that he never played on a super team. And after losing to the Warriors, he went into seclusion. Now, if anybody thinks that LeBron James isn't running the player personnel, I got a bridge in Wasilla, Alaska that, you know, I want to sell you. But here's why I tell LeBron to ice up. The rumor has it that Carmelo has been bought out and he's on his way to Cleveland. If that is indeed the case, he's not going there because he just all of a sudden decided that he wanted to go to Cleveland. He's going there because his buddy LeBron called him and told him to come. And if LeBron did that, then I don't want to hear you say nothing else about Kevin Durant. Because whereas Kevin Durant didn't do what you did, you encouraged Carmelo to do what Kevin Durant did. Mm-hmm. So that makes you a sucker by an extension. But hey, that was a time when we all grew up playing ball. And we wanted the best players on the court on our team. Kevin Durant never did anything that none of us ever did, but he just got paid a bunch of millions of dollars to do it. LeBron, I love you. I think you're the greatest in this generation. I don't think you're Jordan, but I think you're the greatest in this generation. And if you're going to be the greatest in this generation, you got to decide whether you're going to gripe about what somebody else is doing or if you're going to do what they're doing. Pick one or the other. And then that way I can understand that you'll be a true king, because most kings I know are decisive. They decide what they want and that's what they want and they stick to it. You tend to flip flop more on and off, you know, more off the court than you do on the court. So I just need you to make up your mind.
Go ahead. Ice him up though. Ice him up.
LeBron, ice it up, kid. Yeah, ice up, son.
All right. My ice up. Well done. My ice up pick goes to two young ladies by the name of Kendall and Kylie Jenner. You stupid asses. These jokers are so out of touch that they, first of all, they're too young. They don't even know anything, A. But B, so this is what goes down this week. On their website, they are put up this new line of t-shirts where they are going to overlay like selfies or some sort of imagery or brand that has to do with the Kendall and Kylie Jenner, the KK brand or whatever it is. And they overlay their brand with iconic t-shirt images, music images, such as Notorious B.I.G., Tupac, Kiss, and Ozzy Osbourne. So they just make these shirts. Basically, they took an old Biggie shirt and then put their face on it and tried to sell this as, I don't know original. If they're, I don't know what the message is. Like, we are icons, maybe? But let me tell you this. You're nobodies, A.
I blame OJ.
I would not know you at all if I saw you on the street. I would not recognize you, right? And let me just tell you, look, this is some things that came back from this. I'm not the only person that's upset. There's one guy, he's a funny comedian. He's like
Michael
Rappaport. He has a great Facebook live stream where he just crushed these people. But look, Biggie's mom came out and criticized the Jenners and said, I'm not sure who told them that they had the right to do this. The disrespect to these girls is not even reach out to me or anyone connected to the estate baffles me. I had no idea why they think they can exploit the deaths of Tupac and my own son. So that's one thing. And then Sharon Osbourne, Ozzy's lucid partner. And I love Ozzy Osbourne. I saw Ozzy in a lucid moment on the reunion tour where he went with Black Sabbath and they brought back the original band. And it's tied for my top concert with B.B. King on his 75th birthday. I know it's apples and oranges, but a great show is a great show. And Sharon Osbourne tweeted these girls and says, girls, you haven't earned the right to put your face with musical icons. Stick to what you know, lip gloss. So I just think, what I think this shows you is how out of touch people that have endless monetary resources can be, is that these girls have been fed and bought into their own selves so much that they don't realize that these people actually have talent in the world, and they don't have any. They just have good fortune. So to you and your terribleness, these two KK, I'll stick with KK short. That's my KK. I say ice up. All right, guys. That's the show. We're a little long, but let's get...
Blame OJ.
Gosh. Yeah, OJ ruined a lot of things for a lot of
this
people.
Is all OJ's fault. You wouldn't be murdering people, OJ. We wouldn't have to deal with this right now.
I know. Go and watch the OJ Simpson story on Netflix, because you got to watch Ross from Friends be the jerk. God. And it's like, he's just like crying the whole time, just like he was in Friends. I felt like. All right, this is C3 Podcast, brought to you by CarolinaCatChronicles.com. Mel Mayock, tell them where they can hit you up.
Catch me anytime on Twitter @PanthersDrafter. Talk NFL, talk anything, Hornets. Excited about the Hornets again. Let's get a little bit of that conversation.
Wrestling.
Even some wrestling. Talk about D'Angelo's debut in the ring, for sure. But DJ. Hey, catch us. If you want your voice heard, looking for additional writers out there at CarolinaCatChronicles.com. We've got some great writers out there, but we could always use your voice to be heard.
We want the fan perspective. All right. Security guard, the muscle, DJ Rev Rico. Tell us about what you got going on. I know, tell them to check out your new Twitter handle too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So you normally can find me at Rev Rico Speaks. You know, like, I actually also DJ, so you can check me out at D3 Sounds Cincy. You can find me on Facebook. You can find D3 Sounds on Facebook. And that's pretty much how I get down. I talk a lot because I got nothing else better to do.
Word up. All right. This is the C3 Podcast brought to you by CarolinaCatChronicles.com, where every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. we chop things up, but it was a holiday, so we did it on a Wednesday. Thanks for checking the show out. Follow, subscribe, share, support. We could use the help. Good night.
Good night, folks.
Subscribe to the C3 Carolina Panthers podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or anywhere you can catch an RSS feed. Check out CarolinaCatChronicles.com for the latest Panthers news and opinions from the fan perspective.
Great cash, homie.